Let me tell you about Moo.com. Promo code Drinking Bros. Gonna get you 20% off your first order over there. Did you know there's an online cannabis store that ships federally legal THC right to your door? And they found a way to combine THC with carefully selected functional ingredients to target nearly every mood and health concern you can think of. Forget one-size-fits-all supplements that only get you high. Mood's functional gummies are optimized to kick in as little as 15 minutes and take you to the mood you're looking for. Whether that's the magic mind gummies for deep work and creativity, the PMS support to ease cramps and balance mood swings, or their sexual euphoria gummies to help you feel ready for the action at every turn. And touch into a full body experience over there. Listen, I love the night-night gummies, as I call them, the sleepy time gummies. I take, right now they're 15 milligrams. I cut it in half, and I take half a night. 15 minutes, dude, you are gone. I've never had anything like it. 15, 20 minutes tops, and I'm out. Listen, you can find gummies to just get you high pretty much anywhere these days, gas stations, whatever. Mood's functional gummies, though, combine premium federally legal THC with targeted botanicals to help you get into the perfect mood, usually in as little as 15 minutes. Plus, Texas Governor Abbott just said it was all right to get these shipped through the mail. He vetoed the bill down here. Thank God. So order from mood.com today. Use that promo code Drinking Bros for 20% off your first order. Everything ships discreetly right to your front door. No dispensary lines, no awkward conversations, just better days and nights delivered to your doorstep. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with the promo code Drinking Bros. So head on over to mood.com. Find the functional gummy that matches exactly what you're looking for and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. Don't forget to use the promo code Drinking Bros when you check out to save 20% off your first order. Summer's hotter weather is finally here, but don't let hair loss also make you sweat. Regrow hair with the help of Hims. They provide access to personalized treatments so you can see thicker, fuller hair in just 3 to 6 months. Yeah, 3 to 6 months. That's it, kids. Hims offers convenient access to a range of prescription hair loss treatments with ingredients that work, including chews, oral medications, serums, and sprays. Doctor-trusted, clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil can stop hair loss and regrow your hair in as little as 3 to 6 months. Get started from the comfort of your own home. Fill out an intake form, and a medical provider will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your treatment is sent directly to you for free. The process is 100% online, which means getting started has never been more convenient. No insurance is needed, and one low price covers everything from treatments to ongoing care. Plus, treatment options start at $35 per month. Hims has helped hundreds of thousands of men get their confidence back with visibly thicker and fuller hair. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/drinkingbros. That is hims.com/drinkingbros for personalized hair loss treatment options. hims.com/drinkingbros. Individual results may vary based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription required. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Welcome to Drinking Bros, presented by GhostBed.com. Sit back, relax, and grab a fucking drink.
Life on the front lines requires you to step up your game. Owned and operated by former Navy SEAL Sean Mattson, CardoMax has designed just the right supplements for you and is offering Drinking Bros an exclusive offer. Buy one, get one free on your first order. Go to CardoMax.com and use the promo code DB. That's CardoMax.com. helping you achieve your max.
Welcome to Drinking Bros, kids.
Wow, nothing you guys said was going to happen happened.
Like none
of it. What the hell was that bullshit?
None of it happened.
Well, we're live.
Our producers are they have some kind of deformity. We've got a team of scientists on it. We don't know who they are. But we're live super early this morning because we super early for us, the Drinking Bros.
Yeah, I usually wake up about now.
Easily.
I'm not kidding. I usually wake up around 10.
Yep. We had a live show last night. But we will always come out for a huge guest. A former White House press secretary, Dana Perino, joins us. How are you?
I'm great. And I'm thrilled to be here with you. And I'm thankful that you got up early for me.
I know, right? Look at you. You're camera ready. You're firing. You're ready to go. This is why you're a White House press secretary and we're two pieces of garbage. Mm. So this all makes sense.
I don't know. Although I have to say, I have this theory about presidents and the time of day when they like to do things mm-hmm. in terms of like, doing like big events
yeah,
or something.
Yeah.
So I, for President Bush, 43, mm-hmm. and he's a very early morning person. So we were quite compatible that way.
Mm. Yeah. You know, it's interesting you say that because you hear stories and you hear rumors about presidents and when they get started, if that means much. There was a rumor that Obama got started around 11 and that Trump got started super. He was a super early morning guy as well. Does that really have any effect on your presidency?
No, probably not. I think it can affect the way you communicate, though. It used to drive me crazy when President Obama would like to do like his big event of the day. Mm-hmm. He typically liked to do that around 5 p.m. So it would always preempt the 5. I'm like, wait, what are you doing?
Do you think that was intentional? Because he did name you under the broadcasting board or whatever. So it's not like he didn't like you or anything.
I don't know we're actually friendly.
Yeah, yeah.
I can't believe I just said that. I'm sure he's like, you're not my friend. But have had a nice rapport over the years. I actually have a funny story about him, if you want me to tell it.
Fire away, of course.
Okay. I don't want to take over the interview. But in 2005, I was just named the White House Deputy Press Secretary. And there's a dinner every year that the media host, the journalist host, called the Gridiron. And it's a big fancy dinner. And it's been going on for like 113 years or something like that. And the whole thing is it's supposed to be off the record. And the reporters put on these skits and they make fun of the politicians. It's a lot of fun. So I was super excited to be invited because it's hard to get a ticket. And I was the guest of USA Today. And I arrived. My husband couldn't go because they didn't have enough tickets. It wasn't like one of those things. But sitting across from me was Barack Obama. And he had only been in D.C. about, 6 weeks because he was a junior senator from Illinois. Well, I got to tell you, he and I laughed our butts off for 6 hours. So much fun. He took me over to meet Michelle Obama or something. And I get home that night and my husband says, well, how was the event? And I said, it was great. And Peter, I got to sit with Barack Obama, you know, the senator who gave the big speech at the DNC. He's the new big deal. And I got to tell you, I think he could be president in like 25 years. And then 3 years later, do you remember when McCain suspended his campaign and they were going to come and have the big meeting at the White House about the financial crisis?
Oh, yeah.
So McCain comes and I was the last to walk. Now I'm the White House press secretary. And I grew up in Wyoming and Colorado. And one of the things there is, you know, just humility is the name of the game. And I always am constantly reintroducing myself to people because, one, I don't want to be embarrassed because they won't remember me. But two, I want to just make sure that I prevent them from being embarrassed if they don't remember me. So I go to I went to shake his hand and introduce myself. And he says, oh, Dana Perino. It's like, that was my favorite night in all of Washington. And when I sat down on the meeting, the deputy chief of staff leaned over me and he said, what was that all about?
Oh,
that's a little fishy.
Yeah, and he's like, what are we doing here? Because it is Washington, D.C., but I'm yeah. Look, he seems like a friendly guy, you know.
Yeah.
I,
It's tough because, you know, obviously I disagree with him politically. However, yeah. I'm able to separate people from their politics, and I'm sure he's lovely to hang out with and probably have a beer. And and there is a
I was just talking to Jen Psaki about that this morning. So she's the current press secretary for Biden, yep. and she worked for Obama, and we're friendly. And she said that some people, like, in her world are just surprised that she and I could be friends. And I said, well, I always make sure to tell people that we're friends, because I want people to not be so tribal. I mean, if you want to be tribal, fine, but like, I'm not going to lose friends over politics.
Well, Ross has a tribal tattoo, so that's basically the same thing.
Yeah, it's very Ben Affleck, though. Yeah, it was in support of Ben Affleck. Yeah, it had nothing to do with politics.
And it's on his ankle, too.
Is that a tattoo for Ben Affleck?
Yeah. What, are you kidding me?
Are you kidding me?
You've not watched this show, clearly.
Yeah. Have you seen his back tattoo?
I don't know enough about Ben Affleck's love.
My God. When we get off air, the highlight of your day will be Googling Ben Affleck's back tattoo, and it will change your entire mind about Ben Affleck.
Okay.
Well, how do you know what her thought of, what are your thoughts on Ben Affleck now?
Yeah, so let's
go ahead and nail you down.
Guy, what do you think Ben Affleck looks like without a shirt on?
Oh, probably not very good.
Wow, he was Batman. You're going to go hard against Batman?
Yeah, but he's wearing that suit the whole time.
I mean, I'm a huge disappointment to people when it comes to pop culture. I didn't remember. I do remember reading an article that he was in Batman. I didn't see him in Batman.
It's fine. He wasn't my favorite Batman either. It's fine. But he has an entire back tattoo in multiple colors of a phoenix rising from the ashes.
Well, it's rising from his ass, actually.
True. So yeah. It goes down to
which is kind of weird.
Ass,
yeah.
And you can't see the bottom of it or where the tail ends up. That's how far it goes beneath the
Well, I've hired a team. I've hired a team of private investigators to find out exactly where the tail ends up.
Okay. And you have the answer?
Not yet.
Okay.
They're working around the clock.
I also see that you have a prominently featured there, Matthew McConaughey, who had some pretty good poll numbers out of Texas today.
Yeah. So he was a guest on the program a couple months ago, talking a little green lights with us. And yeah, I saw the numbers come out yesterday. There was a poll done here that he was leading Governor Abbott's by 20 points in this hypothetical poll. Is this where we're at in politics, where it's just about the most famous people win? I don't think he'll end
Are
up
you
doing
serious?
It, by the way.
We just happened like no. 4 years ago, asshole.
I understand that, but the most popular guy did not win this presidency.
Well, I mean, it depends on what you mean by popular, right? like people loving to hate somebody is also a form of popularity, right?
He had 47 years to win, and, you know.
Hey, 47th year is the charm, right? Everybody always says that, but I never knew what it meant until this year, so.
Yeah, I guess. You
know, try again. Try and try again.
Yeah, have you met him?
Again,
have you met McConaughey?
And again.
Have you met McConaughey, Dana?
No, I don't believe so. I mean, I don't know if meeting somebody in a green room several years ago counts. I don't think he would remember that. But I, you know what I did? I listened to his book rather than I didn't read it. I listened to the audio. It was very good.
It's fantastic. The reason I asked if you had met him is, you know, I was curious if you think he would be a decent governor, if you got to have the same type of conversation you did with like Barack Obama or somebody like that.
You know, it's interesting. You know, a lot of people, for example, do you remember when Arnold Schwarzenegger ran for governor of California?
I lived there throughout his entire.
Ronald Reagan.
Yeah.
You know, most people just completely dismissed their political ability. Reagan, I thought, was a lot different. Reagan had actually been in politics and had been elected several times for certain things, so he had some more experience. But Arnold Schwarzenegger, you know, he served two terms as governor, and I think that if you're a driven person to succeed in whatever it might be, and for Arnold Schwarzenegger, he's got a great story about how he decided that he was going to be the best, and that was what he was going to do. And then, so whatever he puts his mind to, he tends to succeed. And with McConaughey, I mean, maybe that's the case. But one thing I really love about is that he's willing to engage and he's willing to put his money where his mouth is, right? So he's saying, like, I want to do something. He loves his state. Mm. He loves his country. And so he's willing to like put his name out there. And, you know, as soon as you see a poll like that, you'll start to see opposition research.
Well, it's a huge risk for him.
Yeah, it is.
Not only for all of the leftist private investigators that have now been hired to dig into his past, but also what if he comes in and there's some kind of unpredictable disaster and that he can't control and his legacy in Texas is ruined forever. You know what I mean?
That yeah, and once you run for political office and win, it's not like you're going back to playing True Detective anymore on HBO. Well,
he made that movie with Johnny Knoxville.
Yeah, it was terrible. But it's tough to go back and hide into roles anymore after becoming that famous, especially politically, because everybody knows everything about you. Your beliefs and everything else are out there into the world. I don't see him doing it. Maybe 20 years, something like that, but not now. I think
he'd be a great president in 25 years.
Yeah, because look, I heard that they're rebooting the True Detective, and he's going to come back with Woody Harrelson for HBO. He's got
too much going on.
The
very first season was great. The second season was off the rails.
And the third one was bad as well.
Yeah, but you know, everybody loved the first. I heard he's going to come back and do another one. And he's one of those guys who can pop in and out of comedy and drama pretty seamlessly. Yeah. And he's a unique talent, and he definitely has a great voice for America and just, you know, the common man, if you will, as opposed to like a Bruce Springsteen where it's like, boy, you're not going to drive that topless Jeep through, you know, the dead of winter in the middle of Pennsylvania, my man. So, yes, I think he would resonate with people better than somebody else. Now, Schwarzenegger is an interesting case because I lived in California throughout his entire terms. People don't realize how close the budget was every year to going bankrupt for the state of California. And he consistently made it work and made it happen. And while we were there, that was actually like the nicest time that it was in Los Angeles. It felt like it was getting cleaned up and Hollywood was getting cleaned up.
Who was after him? Was it Moonbeam?
It was Brown, I believe.
Yeah, Jerry Brown.
Yeah, Moonbeam, I think Jerry Brown came back. Yeah.
Yeah. That was his second term because he was governor, what, in 72 or some shit?
Yeah. And then he came.
Yeah. When he got elected again, I was like, wait, he's still what?
Alive?
Yeah.
Yeah, he fucked up too. He was when he was a mayor in the Bay Area. They bought all this Chinese steel to redo the Bay Bridge between Oakland and San Francisco, and it, like, beams started popping and rivets started coming out, and they're like, oh, we should probably get American steel.
I got to ask you, is that Clifford behind you?
No. But it kind of looks like that's my dog, Jasper.
Oh, wow. Is he like with no mouth or eyes or anything, huh? That's a weird dog.
Pop it up. Yeah, bring it in frame. Let's see what we got here. Okay.
Oh, I see.
There it is. Good. That's beautiful, actually.
Good to see he's got eyes.
Yeah, he's a Hungarian Vizsla.
And is that a South Carolina thing on his
collar? Yeah, he's got good eyes. So a fan from South Carolina made that for me. And I have no decoration in here, so I put that there just for some decoration.
There's probably a hidden microphone in there. You got to be careful.
Yeah, your set looks great, and this is just my office.
Well, I mean, we've got OJ on the wall, so what else do you need?
Yeah, we got a signed, OJ Simpson jersey on the wall. Obviously, from his football days, we were a big fan of his football player. Not, you know, the after career.
You're talking about Hurts?
What's up? Yeah, I didn't like the Hurts commercial. I can't think of anything else after that besides the Naked Gun series.
He's mostly known for Hurts commercials, I believe.
Probably. Yeah. Dana, are you friends with all of the White House press secretaries like Sarah Huckabee and all those guys and Kaylee? And do you guys chat about how difficult that job is?
Well, we're certainly friendly. I wouldn't say like I'm friends with Jen Psaki, like we're friendly. We talk now and then. And same with Kaylee and Sarah, but also Josh Earnest from the Obama years. Mm-hmm. And also my favorite one is Marlon Fitzwater.
Really?
He was the press secretary to Ronald Reagan in the second term and George H.W. Bush for his only term. So he's the press secretary for 8 years, which I don't think you could do today because, you know, back then there was no 24/7 news cycle or social media.
Yeah.
And it changed so much. But yeah, I mean, in many ways, the job is the same as it's always been. But also, I just think that, you know, Mike McCurry was, I'm also friendly with him. He was the Bill Clinton press secretary. Do you know, he was the first to allow cameras in the briefing room.
Wow.
And guess what day was the opening day for cameras in the briefing room.
I'm gonna say Lewinsky, the Lewinsky story.
The day that story broke was the first day that cameras were in the briefing room.
Thanks to Matt Drudge for that whole thing.
Yeah.
Yep.
Maybe Fitzwater should come back though, because he's used to dealing with a president that has Alzheimer's.
Yeah. Nailed it.
Hey, I'm not. Boom, Dana. It's reality. I'm not fucking making shit up.
No. And
the dude's got dementia, for Christ's
sake. But also, you've got to cover for the gaffes, and then, you know, you had to do that with Bush.
Well, I can't imagine being the press secretary for fucking Trump. Jesus Christ, what a stressful job that must be.
You almost don't need one, right? Because he was his own.
Yeah, like every single day, though, it's something new you got to explain. What did the president mean by this? I don't fucking know.
Yeah.
Go ask him. Ask him on Twitter. He'll respond.
Do you remember when he tweeted that Covfefe thing?
Oh, yeah.
And instead of just saying, yeah, misfire, butt dial, or something like that, they're like, well, actually, what he was really meant to say, I was like, come on, guys.
No,
yeah.
It turned into a pretty funny meme, too.
He was just like, silly.
Yeah, was there ever a time where you walked in and you knew you just had to lie that day?
No.
Really?
No.
Not one single time where you walked in and they were going to ask you something about Bush and you were like,
there were days that I knew I was going to have to say no comment a lot. And oftentimes that had to do with classified information. I would say that during my press secretary briefings were very different from what you see today. And that in terms of subject matter, I would say that my briefings, because of the time that we were in, and you know, these times very well, 85% of my questions were foreign policy related.
Oh, really?
Because of what was going on
in Iraq and Afghanistan.
I mean, the war on terror all around. In terms of Middle East peace and Israel, that was, you know, to go way back, that was when actually Abbas and Netanyahu or Perez, they were in communications. There was just stuff popping all over the world. And so for me, I'll tell you that I thought that what I thought was going to be my toughest briefing, but ended up being my best briefing, I believe, from a skill standpoint. I woke up one morning and I see the headline that one of the CIA interrogators had destroyed all the tapes from Gitmo. And I was like, okay, here we go. Because one, that whole program, it was still classified. Mm-hmm. Two, now you've got a CIA director, like, are you going to stand by these guys? Mm. 43 was like, yes. And then you just knew the media on the torture front, like that was just going to be all that they talked about. And I'll never forget, right before I went out to do the briefing, the National Security Advisor came to see me, Steve Hadley. And he just talked about decisions that were extremely tough to make on 9/11 in the hours afterwards. And he said, but I will tell you that they were legal decisions and that they saved lives. And that just gave me so much confidence. And I went into that briefing and dun, 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 you, fun, done, out. And I just remember that one as being the kind of the toughest one, but also like maybe the best one.
Yeah, because, I mean, with Bush, obviously, you had to deal with kind of the gaffes. You had to deal with the wars. And then there was, you know, outside things that were going on that sparked controversy. Were you there for the Kanye thing when he said George Bush hates black people on live on air that night?
I was only the deputy at the time, but yes. And actually, then going forward, when President Bush wrote his book on the chapter about Hurricane Katrina, he says, I think in the last paragraph, that it was the most of all the insults that had ever been lobbed at him his entire time in public office, that one hurt the most.
Yeah, because I remember seeing his interview on Oprah, and he had said the exact same thing on Oprah. And the strange thing about George W. Bush, looking back at it, because I always say you can't really judge any president until 15 years out of their once they're out of office 15 years later. Because he was one of those guys who, at the time, wasn't very liked for some of the decisions he had made and everything else. I felt that he worked hard and he tried his best for the country. And then it was, you know, you were there, obviously. I hate Bush and I hate Bush and all that other stuff.
But not only like, that, remember they called him a liar, but not only that, and also Harry Reid said he was unpatriotic.
Yeah. Harry Reid did serve his country in what capacity?
Yeah, exactly. Right. Yeah.
None.
And with that, like, as the years have gone by, he has almost become a lovable figure, and celebrities have embraced him. They've caught in heat for it. Like
Kanye apologized.
Yes, Kanye apologized. Ellen was sitting with him at a game. She took him some heat for that.
She took a lot of heat for that.
And then, you know, most recently, during the COVID thing, he had gotten together with Obama and Biden, just the three of them. Obviously, Trump wasn't there and trying to get people to get vaccinations. And it seems like they're all friendly as well. What was he like as a person behind the scenes?
Oh, gosh. You know, it's an honor now to be able to call him a friend, but I still also think of myself as a staffer in a way. But I got to interview him about a month ago because he has this new book coming out called Out of Many, One, and it's a book of 43 portraits of immigrants. And I said, how'd you come up with that number, sir? Yeah. He's like a running jokester for a lot of things, but very decisive and always ran early. So, for example, if your meeting was scheduled for 11, you better be ready at 10:40. Like champing at the bit all the time, wanting to get going on things. I liked observing him with his wife and daughters because he would just have them giggling constantly. I remember one time, you guys might like this story. We were in the Situation Room, and I just was an observer watching his secure video conference with Karzai, mm-hmm. Afghanistan. And he had heard that Karzai was mad about something that had happened along the way. And so he gets on the secure video conference. How you doing? How's your son? I'm talking to him. And then after a little bit, he goes, I hear you're mad at me for whatever. He's like, oh, no, sir, I'm not. Mr. President, I'm not mad at you. I'm just mad at the blah, blah, blah. And Karzai is trying to explain. The president says, all right, good. Because if it weren't for me, you'd be dead.
No kidding.
Wow.
And then it was like, goodbye. And I was just like, yes. I love those moments of getting to, you know, see him behind the scenes. But he would never talk about something like that. Like the fact that I just told you that story would probably, like, he'd grimace about that because, you know, he didn't talk about things. I remember also, like, reporters, if they had moments with him that were off the record, afterwards they say, why isn't that the guy we see on TV?
Yes. Yep.
And that's something that's really hard to do. You know, sometimes some people are one way in front of the cameras, mm-hmm. and like, it's just a thing. Another thing that's kind of funny is, you heard of strategery, right?
And oh, yeah. We use that all the time on this show, strategery.
We used to have a meeting at the White House called strategery every Monday. And if you got invited to that meeting, like, you were really, like, in the know.
Yeah.
And so a couple of years ago at the Bush Center in Dallas, he invited Lorne Michaels of Saturday Night Live to come. Mm-hmm. And Lorne Michaels said, you know, we put our best writers on you, and that's how we came up with strategery. And the president said, no, I said strategery.
Yeah.
No, no, sir. Like, we wrote that. You never. And the president was like, are you telling me for 15 years, I thought I said strategery? So I said, and then he said, but I bet you didn't come up with misunderestimated, which was another one of his.
Yeah. He's like, he's like Ricky from Trailer Park Boys. He just makes up words. And you can tell what he's saying, but they're not the right words.
But it made him, look, to me, it made him more relatable. And he was one of those guys. And back to what you were saying about the call with the guy from Afghanistan. That's what I personally want out of a president. And that's what I expect to happen on these calls. But you wonder if they do. So by giving that little bit of insight, that's what you want out of a leader of our country. That's how I assume Trump talked to people all the time around the world. And I'm sure Barack Obama did as well. But you always wonder, do you know more than I do? Like, how do those?
No, okay. Not about that. No.
Yeah.
But I, look, I think, as you said, like, everyone, I think if you get to that level and you try, and then there are circumstances that happen to you along the way.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, situations that happened to you along the way, I'm sure, were unexpected. You were hired, what, 2 months after 9/11?
Yes, but I started at the Justice Department.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was a spokesperson there. That's a good job because you learn 101 ways to say no comment. And then I went to the White House from there. Yeah, worked my way up.
Yeah, because if somebody wanted to do that job, and look, it seems so brutal that I don't know who would want to do that job, to be honest with you. Is that how they start? Is that how they get going? Is that the route to take?
I think that one thing that a lot of the press secretaries have in common is that we worked on Capitol Hill at some point. And I encourage everyone to work on Capitol Hill, even if you don't want to work in politics. I think it's great training. You make a lot of friends. You learn how a bill becomes a law, and that will serve you well no matter what you do. My family, I was born in Wyoming. My family had no political connections. When I say that, people think that I like grew up with the Cheneys. Like, no, we weren't like that. And I had, when I first got to the White House, I had a lot of like inferiority complex about education because I went to the University of Southern Colorado on a speech team scholarship. And I write about in this new book I have out that I was always feeling like a little bit, again, inferior to other people at the White House because so many people went to Harvard and Yale and all the Ivy Leagues. And then after a while, I realized that the president turned to me for my thinking and my advice and perspective just as much as he did anybody else. And that was helpful for me because I want everybody to know, and you guys know this.
Yeah.
Everybody puts on their pants the same way. And it doesn't matter where you went to school or if you don't go to school. You have a lot to contribute. And just because somebody went to the Ivy League, that doesn't mean they're better than you.
Where did you go to college, by the way?
It was University of Southern Colorado in Pueblo.
Wow. That's a small, it's a tiny school.
Yeah. Really small.
Yeah.
Like 5,000 people, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. It's very small.
And many people that go there, that they are actually there, maybe working full time. I was not. I was able to go to school full time. But a lot of people at that college are trying to do both.
Yeah. Yeah. And I wanted to chat about your new book, which is out. Everything Will Be Okay. Life Lessons for Young Women from a Former Young Woman.
Yeah. How did I end up getting on your podcast with this book title?
It's fine. Just kidding.
My husband thinks that every man should read the book because then he will fully understand that he will never fully understand women.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I've already told my wife that numerous times where I'm just like, whatever problem she has, I'm like, I will never understand that. You're probably going to have to chat with your girlfriends about that because I don't know anything that you're saying right now.
My husband, when he read the first draft, he finished it and he said, wow, women think a lot.
And it's doing well. Look, you're number 16 in self-esteem on Audible. Audible's the thing now. Everybody's listening to books on Audible. You were talking about McConaughey earlier. That is the new jam.
I recorded my own because I didn't do that in the first one, but I'm glad that I did that. And yeah, so it hit the New York Times bestseller list. We've been on that for about 5 weeks. But actually, regardless of that, the feedback I'm getting from readers is really good and it makes it all worth it.
What made you want to write the book?
So I do a ton of mentoring. I get a lot of questions. I find that young people today are very hungry for advice. They also, for the most part, want you to give them a plan. Like somebody wants to be White House press secretary. Mm-hmm. They'll say, what do I need to do? And if I said, okay, here's the 12 things you need to do to be press secretary, they'll do it by 1 a.m. tomorrow.
Yeah.
The thing is, when I write the book, I look back at every career advancement and it was nothing I could plan, but it was something I could be ready for. And that makes all the difference. In fact, the day that I became the White House press secretary, I actually had gone in that morning to resign from the White House.
Really?
And I saw, because I had, we had about 18 months left to go. I didn't think I was going to move up from being deputy to press secretary. My husband was like, you are working from 4 a.m. to 10 p.m. every night. And I don't know about this for the next 18 months. And so we went on this long weekend. I reluctantly said, you know what? I think you're right. Let me jump ship now. Let's see if we can get our life going in a different direction. And I went in and I needed to tell Ed Gillespie before I told the president. And said, I said, Ed, can I see you after the meeting? He said, oh, I need to see you too. Fine. So when the meeting ended, he said, Dana, can you stay? Sure. So I sit down and I went to blurt it out because I'm so nervous. And he said, can I go first? And I said, sure. And I sat back and he said, the president would like to make you the press secretary on Friday. And I was like, all right, wonderful, great. And I never told him. And he didn't know that till I wrote my first book. Because imagine if I had said, oh, I was going to resign. They might have pulled it back. And I knew that my life had changed dramatically from that moment on. So I do a lot of mentoring. And over the years, I've realized that the worries and fears that women deal with in the workplace, especially in that 25-year-old range, they were following them into their 30s and beyond. And my point is this. You're going to have worries and fears. I'm not going to tell you not to worry. But can you channel that into something more positive for yourself? And also, if you're born in America, you already won life's great lottery.
Dan says that every day. Yeah. Yeah.
If you're an educated woman in America, you're in the driver's seat. You're not the victims. You know, I don't, women who think that, oh, the guys are get all the promotions. And that's actually, the statistics don't bear that out anymore. Women are doing great. And so my goal of this book is to say, I'm not going to give you a plan, but I'm going to give you some thoughts and advice on how to have a more productive career, get going in the direction that you want to be, start climbing the ladder, but also to have some serenity and joy along the way. Because I didn't really feel like I worried my 20s away for no reason.
Yeah, and it's interesting. There was a listener last night after the live show, Dan, that walked up to us and asked us, did you think 5 years ago you would be doing this or be here? And our answer was obviously no. But I think one of the most important things, like, you know, to your point of everybody asking you how to become White House press secretary and all that stuff, there is no plan to any of this. I think the biggest takeaway is be prepared to pivot and then go where that direction takes you versus trying to make something happen and, you know, keep going along that path. Because it'll either work its way out like it did for you, or it won't, and you can pivot and do something else. But always be prepared for that.
Luck is when skill meets opportunity.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's a very
succinct way.
Well,
you guys know this too, which is that you have to be willing to take a risk.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, actually, one of the best pieces of advice I ever got from President Bush was him asking me when I was thinking about starting my own business or joining a PR firm. He's like, what's the worst that could happen?
Yeah.
And when you realize that the worst that could happen is that you're an educated woman in America and you get a different job, I mean, take the risk.
Yeah, you're fine at that point. When you went back home to your husband that night after you had gotten that job of press secretary, he probably wasn't that amped knowing that those hours would even be ramped up even more. I imagine that was a pretty difficult dinner that night.
I mean, no, actually, I called him right away and I was like, guess what? And he was thrilled for me. When I read the book out loud, I finished it and I thought, wow, there is so much of my husband in this book. My favorite piece of advice that I talk about, and there's so much of, I have a lot to say in this book, but young people are putting off getting married or committing to a life partner because they think it will hurt their career.
Mm-hmm.
And I told them that choosing to be loved is not a career limiting decision. And just because you think, well, maybe, you know, I met somebody at 25, but, you know, I got to get my career going and I'll wait. And maybe at 32, it's all going to work out. Like, that's not the case. My husband actually helped me one time. I got kicked out of the Oval Office early on when I was deputy. And it wasn't my fault. It was a miscommunication that the president had with the communications director about an interview that he was supposed to do with a reporter. And the president put his foot down and said, I'm not doing the interview. And therefore, she doesn't need to be here. And he looked right at me and, you know, cocked his head to the side and like, see yourself out. And I was mortified. And I crawled to my office like 32 steps away. I shut the door behind me and I called my husband and I told him what happened. And he said, well, Dana, just think for the rest of your life, you can say I've been kicked out of better places than this.
Yeah.
And it helped, you know, take the sting out of it. And 5 years later, I was on the book tour with President Bush for his book.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, hey, sir, do you remember when you kicked me out of the Oval Office? He said, I never kicked you out of the Oval Office. I'm like, no, don't you remember? And I was wearing this thing and then this happened and you said this. And I remember every single detail of this slight. And he had no recollection of it at all. And he said, are you still upset? No, but women will do that. Like women will replay that negativity in their head over and over again. And so I try to give some advice on letting things like that go.
Well, anybody with intense drive will remember little things like that that mean a lot to you, but maybe not so much to the other person.
And I took that personally.
Yes. It's very Michael Jordan, Last Dance, Doc Sitch, where, you know, it helps drive you and keep you going after that. What was your worst day in the White House?
Well, I mean, I think getting hit by the boom, the steel arm of the boom mic in Iraq.
Oh, yeah, when the guy threw a shoe at Bush. Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah. I wouldn't say, I mean, I was so honored to work on behalf of the United States and the country that every day was great. I look back with such fondness, but getting hit in the face and getting a black eye, that kind of sucked.
Yeah. Yeah, I would imagine so.
Yeah. What happened in that situation? I'm sure they swarm the guy and take him out, obviously.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I say I was the only one who got hurt, but...
You're a survivor.
They had him on the ground, yeah.
A shoe survivor.
And the president insisted on finishing the news conference, and he didn't know that I'd been hit. And I had my hand over my eye, and I was tearful. And this, I wish I could find him. A Marine reached over his big hand and basically pulled me up over this crowd to take me out. And afterwards, the president found me and he said, "What happened? You know, I thought you were just crying because the guy threw a shoe at me." I was like, "No, sir. I grew up in Wyoming. I'm a little tougher than that."
I would hope so.
you took it right to the dome. All right. What was your best day then in the White House?
I have so many. Maybe I'll just tell you a personal story that I don't know. I had so many good days, but my dad started this tradition when I was in third grade where I had to read the Rocky Mountain News and Denver Post before he got home from work. And I had to be prepared to discuss two articles before dinner. And it really started a lifelong love of learning and news and public affairs and government. And then, so my dad and I were super close then. And then my parents got divorced in the year 2000. And all those years in the White House, my dad hadn't come to Washington at all. And we were kind of distant, and we're getting ready to end the White House years. And I told my husband, I feel like I should invite my dad to this dinner that the president and Mrs. Bush were hosting for Prime Minister Berlusconi. And my last name's Perino, so there's a little connection there. And I said, if my dad doesn't arrive or doesn't want to come, then that's fine. But at least I'll know I invited him. But he says, now the president knew this whole story about me and my father. And one day he got on Marine One and he said, "See, you invited your dad to the White House." I said, "Yes, sir, I did." "And we're just about to pass the Washington Monument." I said, "It's a big deal." I said, "Yes, sir, it is." And we were both looking out the window. And then he looked right at me and he said, "And I am so proud of you."
Really?
And yeah, so I, as a president, a manager, he had so much going on, but he knew how much that meant to me. And then when we arrived that night, we're getting ready to go through the photo line and the military aide was about to announce us and the president stopped him and he said, "This man needs no introduction. That's Leo Perino." And took my dad to meet Condi Rice and took him all around to show him a few things in the White House, that, like the Remingtons, the sculptures. Mm. And it was just one of those things where I will never forget, that kindness. And although I will say, can I give you one other story?
Yeah. We have plenty of time. Go ahead.
So towards the end of the White House, like 3 days before we left, we went to the christening of the aircraft carrier for the H.W. Bush, the George H.W. Mm-hmm. Bush.
USS.
That's how they christened the ship. So the whole family was there. I was there just as a staffer. It was very cold. It was like, we only had like 3 days left together in the White House. And the Secret Service agent comes over and taps me on the shoulder and says, "The president needs you in the helicopter in 10 minutes. Now, anytime there's a transition from one president to the other, it's a time of instability. And at that time, there was a lot of terrorist chatter, a lot. So my first thought was, we have to get out of here. And okay, so the reporters know to always watch the press secretary to see if something. So I just like chilled for 3 minutes and then I calmly walked away. And I'm walking towards the helicopter and I see Condi Rice getting on. I thought, holy shit, something is wrong. So we get on the helicopter. The president bounds on and he says, "Let's go see the SEALs." And we flew over to the, I don't know what that's called, but the SEALs training center.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there was this huge aircraft hangar, and it's filled with Navy SEALs in suits. And there's a speech being given by Dick Cheney, and they didn't know the president was coming. It was a surprise. And they're all in suits, and they all have really long beards. And, you know, most of those young men had volunteered after 9/11.
Right.
And that connection, and you guys know this, but that connection to your commander in chief is strong. And at least it was for them. And so he gave a speech. They won't stop applauding. It's crazy. And he said he'll take pictures with each of them. So we're going to be there a while. So I kick it to the back of the room, thought I'd just wait there and observe. And these two SEALs came over to me and they said, "Are you the press secretary?" "Yes." And they said, "Could we get our picture made with you?" I'm like, "Okay, sure." And I was honored that they even knew who I was. And so I asked them two questions just to be conversational. And I asked the first one, "You know, what made you want to become a Navy SEAL? Sense of adventure, chance to travel, patriotism, like, what was it?" And he says, "Oh no, ma'am, chicks dig it."
That's a very Navy SEAL answer. I'm sure he had great hair.
And I said, "Even
too.
With the beard?" And he's like, "Oh yeah." I'm like, "Okay." And then I asked the second one, "When you are preparing to go wherever it is you may be going, do you have to take a lot of language classes?" And he says, "Oh no, ma'am, we're really not there to talk."
Yeah. So wait. You, what do you mean, even with the beard? Are you? Am I being attacked right now?
Their beard is not like theirs.
Yeah.
You know what their beards look like. Their beards were like down to here.
Dana, you're not new to podcasts. We've got some sponsors who put the show on the air. Shockingly, first and foremost is GhostBed.com/drinkingbros. 30% off everything in the entire store. Sheets, mattresses, pillows. Now the adjustable bases are 40% off. So if you want to go out and get yourself an adjustable base, that'll be 40% off when you type the promo code Drinking Bros in at checkout. And as always, they got a 36-month pay-as-you-go program and no interest there. So you can couple all of these deals together with that deal at checkout and probably walk out of there at like $35 a month. It's a nice thing. It's a nice thing at ghostbed.com/drinkingbros. Sleep so good, it's scary. Woo-hoo-hoo-hoo. Next up, we got First Leaf. Oof. You know I love the First Leaf wine. My mouth is watering already thinking about it. Try firstleaf.com/drinkingbros. 6 bottles of wine for $29.95 and free shipping. You do not get a better deal in this life than that as far as wine goes. It's just a quick mix and match on there. You go and tell them what you like, what you don't like. You can get reds, whites, Moscatos if you want, everything you can think of. And you tell them what you want and what you don't want, and then they'll box it up and then they'll ship it out to you. And it comes straight to your doorstep. Whew. Is there more to say about this? I mean, is there really more to say than 6 bottles of amazing wine for $29.95? I've been a member for, I don't know, a year now. It's like Christmas every time that box shows up to my house. Save time, money, and stress with First Leaf, the wine club designed with you in mind. Join today and you'll get 6 bottles of wine for $29.95 and free shipping. Just go to tryfirstleaf.com/drinkingbros. That's 6 bottles of wine for $29.95 and free shipping at tryfirstleaf.com/drinkingbros. Last but not least, talked about them yesterday. I'm going to talk about them again today because I love them. I love them. Theragun. Boom. Theragun. Big boy shit. I feel like a goddamn professional athlete now. We got Theragun on the show. Theragun. You know what this is. Every athlete on the planet uses a Theragun. If you've been to a CrossFit or any gym across America, they've got them in there. And usually, you know, these things are crazy expensive and you're just like, whoa, the gym's got it. I don't have one. Now you can get your own at Theragun.com/drinkingbros right now. And get your Gen 4. The Gen 4 Theragun is out today. And that's clocking in at $199. That's affordable. Because that thing lasts forever. You want to talk about deep tissue massage? This is the very best in the business. Every sports team uses this in America. Every gym uses this in America. This product's so big, I'm surprised they're on this show. Like, that seems crazy to me. It seems crazy to me. Love Theragun. It is used by over 250 professional sports teams around the globe. Paul George to DeAndre Hopkins, Maria Sharapova, you name it, they've got it. Try Theragun for 30 days, starting at only $199. Go to Theragun.com/drinkingbros right now and get your Gen 4 Theragun today. That's Theragun.com/drinkingbros. Theragun.com/drinkingbros is going to save your life. I can promise you that. I am stressed as shit right now. And if I didn't have this thing in my life, well, it'd be a problem for people. You know what I'm talking about, Dana. Life is stressful. Dan's is well-kempt. He's a well-kempt man. You know?
I'm feeling personally attacked right now, which is good because I was getting ramped up to start asking some political questions and get a little heated here.
Yeah. And before we do, I had one more question for you, just out of curiosity that I haven't gotten the answer for. We've interviewed another White House press secretary, but they didn't make it till the end of the term. Since you did, what is that final night like? I always imagine it to be like some crazy party where it's like, look, it's our last night in the White House. Here's a bunch of booze. Here's some drugs. Like,
yeah, just it's let's cocaine. Really light it up. I mean, look, it's George W. Bush. He got a DUI when it fucking meant something.
Yes, when it meant something.
In the 70s in Texas. Do you know how drunk you've got to be to get a DUI in Texas in the 1970s?
It's next to impossible.
It was in Maine.
Oh, it was in Maine. You're right.
Oh, that's right.
Which is even worse, actually.
Yeah. But is it crazy? And like, do people really go ham or no?
No.
Oh man.
There's a transition.
I don't even remember that night.
Yeah.
My husband and I were leaving the very next day. We left and we went to South Africa for a month and we did 2 weeks of safari and then we did 2 weeks volunteer work. And so I think I was probably packing. I don't know, maybe other White Houses have a big party. This was the Bush White House, so it was not so much party.
Yeah, he did all his partying before he got to the White House.
Yeah, I just assumed before
he was
partied.
40.
Yeah.
He gave up drinking at 40. Yeah.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
And Trump never drank.
No, Trump never drank.
According to him.
And Biden doesn't drink.
Really? I mean, look, he's already impaired. I mean, how much more can he fucking do to his
brain? Yeah. Well, you know, at this point, one, yeah. I would.
Obama did.
He smoked, so he definitely drank, right? Nobody smokes and doesn't drink. That's not a thing.
Yeah, I've never met somebody who smokes cigarettes and doesn't drink.
Oh, my God. You guys should have John Boehner on your show.
Oh, he'll cry the whole time, though.
He smokes and drinks a lot.
Oh, well.
Yeah, makes sense.
Smoke and drink and cry yourself to sleep every
night. Yeah, you have to, I think, at that job.
He's a sweet man.
At that job.
Can you imagine having been House Majority Leader during that fucking shit show? Jesus Christ.
No.
And that's what I want to ask.
Yeah, you know that Pelosi and Reid tried to defund the troops 39 times, and Boehner and McConnell beat them back every single time.
Okay, well, I mean, that's fair, but Boehner and McConnell also tried to reverse Obamacare without the votes 46 times, so let's not pretend like they're fucking heroes, okay?
Yeah.
These guys are assholes. Anyways, I want to get to some political shit. We can't have the press secretary on without talking about politics.
Of course.
I've read in an article that you're more of an independent than a conservative or liberal. Is that correct? I mean, I don't know who.
Is that how someone described me?
Yes. Somebody described you. Maybe
it's not how I would describe myself.
Okay. Well, tell me how you would describe yourself then.
I mean, I've always been a small government, fiscal conservative, like deficit hawk, and strong on national defense. Mm-hmm. I think that people might call me more of a traditional conservative. I think the definition of conservative is being reworked by some people, but
Of course, in the same way that Newt Gingrich and Frank Luntz reworded liberal, right?
Show, they think of me as more. They might think of me as more independent because they think I'm fair.
Maybe that's what. Yeah, maybe that's the point they were making. That's very possible. At any rate, so you're talking about small government deficit hawk. How do you square that with your boss presiding over the largest expansion of the federal government in history?
Yeah,
doubling the national debt. So on and so forth. Nation building, which you said he wasn't going to do. That's probably all of those things are problematic. And it's become entirely problematic for this country because every time conservatives get in, historically over the last 60 years or so, there's been a bit of they've dialed back on spending a little bit. Now the last two Republicans have not done that, and now our national debt's fucked, right? So I wonder what your thoughts are on that.
Yeah, I think a couple of things. I remember the no nation building thing being really speaking to me in 2000.
Yeah.
Also I liked compassionate conservative as a definition. I felt that fit my my upbringing and how I approach life. I think a couple things. One, I do recognize that being attacked on 9/11 and having to reposture, that I understood that. I also think on the nation building front, it's a really good question, Dan, and I'm not trying to dodge it. I'm trying to think it through and
you
be
can circle
thoughtful.
Back on that one.
That's a very Jen Blansky thing to do.
You totally butchered her fucking name. Jesus Christ.
It's not a tough one. When it's a PL like that.
That wasn't even close. There's no L in her name. It's Saki. Like,
is it?
Saki, P-S-A-K-I.
Saki spelled S-A-K-E, my man.
That's true. Now I'm thirsty.
Yeah.
It is.
And then the other thing, I do remember one thing that happened, a lot of people point back to this, I think it was the Farm Bill in 2003, maybe 2004, in which the president said, I'm not going to go above 700 billion or whatever it was. Mm. And they came in at 700 billion. And he felt like he had an obligation to say, okay, fine. Like I said that, but the problem is he probably should have said no, because that was when you ended up with all those terrible earmarks.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's all Washington's about, is stealing money from people and spending it on useless bullshit, right?
Yep.
Like 20 years of war. Now I've fought in these wars. I'm tired of this shit.
Yeah.
So I understand your position on we had to do something for sure, but 20 years worth of war certainly wasn't what we needed to do.
Yeah.
And adding 180,000 new federal jobs is sure as fuck not what we should have done. We're seeing the fruition of that stuff now. I mean, these agencies just waste and waste and waste money. It's incredible. We should just start burning money on TV for fun. At least I'll have something to fucking watch.
Well, and if they pass another $2 trillion infrastructure bill, which I think they'll probably get, let's say they trim it back a little bit, like at like $1.6 trillion.
I think it'll be $1.4, but it's going to be somewhere in that neighborhood.
And then you end up with, inflation being a real possibility, and we haven't dealt with inflation
in a long time. Yeah.
We're probably about to.
Yeah, it's been a while. I mean, it's very bizarre, and there's politics change, right? Positions change. The Lincoln Republicans are certainly different than modern Republicans. The Dixiecrat liberals are certainly not the same as they are now, right? So maybe we're in one of those paradigm shifts, but the problem is no one is shifting to be more fiscally conservative. Everybody's just spending more money, mm-hmm. right? And
true. Biden, I do think we're in the middle of a political realignment on both
sides.
It seems
like it, yeah.
But to your point, I my co-anchor, Bill Hemmer, he's constantly asking about in terms of fiscal conservative, like this guy is very much, and he's just like in dismay about it.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think.
Oh, the last fiscal conservative we had in office was H.W. Bush, to be honest. And I mean, even Reagan before him.
Look what happened, right? So he didn't spend enough.
Right.
To deal with the economy.
Well, I don't agree with that. I don't agree with that at all. We waste so much money, right? I mean, it's not a matter of having enough money. It's a matter of spending it correctly. We spend money on stupid bullshit. We're paying farmers not to farm right now. You know what I mean? There's all kinds of...
not only that, I just interviewed a woman from... You're in Austin, but if you were in Dallas, I would ask you to go to this restaurant. Mm-hmm. It's called Enchiladas Ole. So she came on today. This is a woman that's working so hard. She can't find workers.
Yeah.
Because of the enhanced unemployment benefits that now go through September.
Yeah, when you're
crazy.
Making the same money as
not
working...
Not the same. No. Most of these people, I think 40% of people are making more than they would
more,
be.
Yeah. So they're going to sit home.
Yeah.
We actually asked her dad, he's 76 years old and had heart surgery last week. He had 2 stents put in, if he could help her over the weekend, and he did it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
We'll go there. We're going to Dallas in a couple of weeks.
Actually. Yeah, we are in Dallas in a couple of weeks. You were mentioning a political realignment. Who's coming up in this next crop that we should be looking out for, Republican and Democrat wise, if there is going to be a realignment of the parties? Because let's face it, the Democrats are old. The age is the biggest thing. Pelosi is 80. Schumer is in his 70s. Biden is very close to 80. He's 79 years old. The crop underneath that seems to be like the AOCs and a little more further left on that. On the right, I would have said prior to 3 weeks ago, Matt Gaetz, who's been one of the up-and-comers. He's been on the show as well. I would have said Nikki Haley in that bunch, but
I would still say Nikki Haley.
I would,
although she's been pretty quiet lately. I don't know if that might be strategic.
It might be
just to not be associated with all the stupid bullshit that's going on right now. Frankly,
it might be. And then, you know, look, there's been reports out of Mar-a-Lago that Trump has been getting in shape and you know, getting ready to potentially.
Is he doing like a Rocky rerun montage scene right now? Punching sides of beef in a fucking. How funny would that
be? They said he's down like 30 pounds and, you know, he's been taking meetings and they're getting things potentially ramped up for another run in 2024.
Ugh, no thanks.
In this political realignment that you were talking about, what do you see that's going to happen here in 22 and 24?
Mm. Well, in 22, I think that you actually will see the House Republicans take back the House. Because even just with redistricting, you could probably get to 10 or 11 seats, actually. Mm-hmm. And right now, Nancy Pelosi only has a 2-seat margin. So unless the Republicans completely screw things up, they are in good shape to take back the House. I think the Senate might be a little harder, but it's definitely doable. It's doable. It's just going to be a lot of money. You mentioned that on the left, the new crop, the younger people are mostly on the left. I think that those are certainly ones getting most of the attention.
But I think what he meant was the younger people on the left are super progressive and not really the traditional liberals. Like, I mean, look, a lot of the older people like Pelosi are getting kind of far to the left. But by and large, I think most of these people are classical liberals that are, you know, kind of going with the flow of everything.
Yeah, because even Pelosi walked back that Supreme Court thing last week of, hey, we're going to.
Because she knew that she wouldn't just lose 25 seats, she'd lose 75
yeah,
seats.
Yeah, correct. Yeah. And that's what the Republicans are now going to be able to run on in 22 of saying, hey.
They're going
to
run on it no matter what. I mean, honestly, we talked about this months before the election even happened because they were floating that idea. That was a huge miscalculation. On
Oh, yeah.
Just that one thing probably lost them a lot of seats in 22.
Yep.
Like, yeah.
I mean, that was so stupid.
So what do you guys think about somebody like maybe Connor Lamb or Abigail Spanberger? I mean, the Democrats did a pretty good job of recruiting for candidates that were not that were ones that could actually win in some of those swing districts that were more like a Colin Allred of Texas, you know. But the thing is, like, all of those guys, those Democrats, they don't get any attention at all.
They're not getting money because special interest groups are only paying crazy people. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, you're not going to be a run of the mill. That's why Adam Kinzinger in Illinois is acting like such an asshole lately.
Yeah.
He's just trying to get money for his next campaign, and that is the danger of a 2-year election cycle. It doesn't make any sense. Why in the fuck would we hire people for 2 years so they can govern for about 4 months and then spend the rest of the time running for re-election and raising money? It's stupid.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Cause we've had Adam on the show as well. And that was a very hard pivot for him. Once Trump was, close to out of there, it was like, well, time for my reelection. Let's go this way.
Yeah. 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 Trying to invoke the 25th and all that shit.
And the people you mentioned, you know, as far as the Democratic side, the weird thing about today's politics that we discuss all the time in this show is, the branding of it. There seems to be a need for a level of fame on social media or a podcast or something to get your name out there in case people aren't spending the huge dollars. Because right now, the people that dominate the headlines are the AOCs, are the Matt Gaetzes, are the it's those people.
Well, it's an analog.
Dan Crenshaw.
It's an analog for how media is going in general.
Yes.
I mean, we get more daily downloads than a lot of network television shows get viewers.
Correct.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's a problem now. So if you... Raising money, look, I've worked in political campaigns before. That most of that money goes towards television and radio ads, right? Mm-hmm. I mean,
that's the majority of it.
Billions of dollars a year go to that stupid shit. So, the new media thing is quite a pivot. What Ted Cruz has done, what Crenshaw has done, I don't like any of these people, obviously. I don't like any politician. I think they're all cunts, but it's
Dan's anti-politician. He's got a t-shirt on that says defund politicians on there.
Well, yeah, I mean, look, if we're trying to...
I saw that. I liked it.
Yeah, I'll send you one. Politicians are the worst human beings on earth. They are just awful. So
there's some pretty awful people. Some of them are politicians. Guys, I'm going to have to run.
Oh, no, good. No worries. You know, this is the point of the show where we get to the Drinking Bro of the Week, which is someone who has inspired you or helped you become the person you are today. Who would you like to give the Drinking Bro of the Week to?
No pressure.
Can you give a Drinking Bro...
It can be a bro out as well. It could be a lady.
Oh, yeah, it doesn't have anything to do with drinking.
I'm kidding. I definitely think, just that, you know, as we talked about it, the person who's had such a positive influence on my life was George W. Bush. So we'll give him the Drinking Bro.
Fantastic. And check out Dana's book. It's available everywhere.
Thank you so much.
On Amazon. And she reads her own audiobook, which you know I champion on this show a lot.
Say the name of the book again.
Oh, Everything Will Be Okay.
Everything will be okay. Life lessons from a young...
And Dan, disagree. I want you to believe that. Everything will be okay.
I disagree. Everything is not going to be okay. I mean, it'll be okay for me, because if everything collapses, I'll go live in the woods somewhere here in Texas.
Right? Yeah.
I don't give a shit.
Yeah. Dan's dressed for an insurrection already. You know? So it's
Hey, thanks fine. For having me. I really appreciate all you guys do, and congrats on your success.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for being here. We appreciate it. Check out Dana's book. Thanks for being here, Dana.
Thank you.
Okay, bye, guys.
See ya.
Bye. D'Anthony.
Yep.
What I love about you in particular is you're not afraid to say all politicians are cunts to a former White House press secretary.
Yeah. maybe it was a I don't know if it was a coincidence that she had to leave right after that. But we did.
I don't think so.
No, there was somebody.
I don't think it was a coincidence.
There was someone knocking at her door and then handing her papers and shit. So maybe.
I'm sure she was off camera going, "Oh right, this is about to turn."
Yeah, her assistant was watching on YouTube and was like, "Nope."
It's always a fun game with these to just watch a guest start internally screaming.
Yeah. Here's the thing. I like Dana. She's great. But it's when you work in politics, it's. You know, you know what goes on. We know what goes on in D.C. We all know what goes on.
Yeah, those people are cunts, man. Come on. Yeah, yeah. They're all like, it's like
she's great, by the way.
It's like a mean girl clique. Politicians. D.C.'s a mean girl clique where everybody thinks they know better than you and blah, 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 trying to tell you how to run your life and shit. And they have this idea that giving you some of your own money back is somehow doing you a fucking favor. Right, suck. Right. My hog. That's a bunch of horse shit, man. Jesus Christ, fuck these people. But I do. I mean, she's nice. And I agree with her about W. I think he's a good man.
I do too.
And I think that Obama was probably a good man as well. I never met him or anything, but that's a fucked up job to have. I think presidents are less cunty than Senate and Congress, frankly. I think that's where the real cunts are. You know what I mean? They're the entrenched bureaucrats for fucking decades.
Yeah.
That's real cunt behavior right there. Every now and again, a president's cool. I mean, Ronald Reagan was a piece of shit, right? Fucking ignoring the AIDS crisis and letting people die. Fuck that guy. Bill Clinton was fucking Uncle Touchy over there, right?
Yeah, raping people. Cigar and shit. Shop in there. Yeah. I don't know.
And I mean, Trump was a loudmouth, but he didn't. I don't think he did anything too fucked up.
This guy,
Biden here, he's he's lost.
Yeah,
he doesn't know where he is. They should put out a fucking silver alert for this asshole. He's just like wandering around the White House lawn. Hey, you see my dog? And the dog's over there biting people and shit.
Yeah, the dog's attacked 9 people. The listeners here on YouTube are saying we were waiting for the over under of how long it took Dan to say all politicians are cunts on the show.
I waited till the end of the show because I'm a professional.
Yeah, we always do. We always do. In case they leave, just like that.
Yeah.
We wait till the end of the show. And then
oh boy.
You think we'll have anybody else from the White House back on the show or
She wasn't.
No, she was still great. There. She was great. I'm sure she had to go do like a million interviews and all that other stuff. So, it's hilarious. It's hilarious. we're not typically up this early either.
And, no, I'm going to go back and go to sleep, I guess. I don't know.
That one got me. No, while we're up here, we are getting into the closing arguments of the Derek Chauvin trial as we speak. And it's people are already gearing up here. Looks like the National Guards, it seems to be, according to these pictures, is getting geared up in the city of Minneapolis. Not surprised by that?
No.
Talk to some cops.
I think the NFL should send some scouts up there. See who's doing the real running. You know what I mean? Like, they're clocking looters as they're going by.
Sign them up.
Turn it into a fucking game show. If they're going to burn their city down, at least let me watch.
You had the line of the night last night during the live show at WTF when you said, type in the promo code BLM for 100% off.
At Nike, yeah.
Yeah, at Nike, and you're good to go.
Yeah. Imagine giving hundreds of millions of dollars to a cause, and then they come fucking rob you. Asshole.
Yeah, so this is, look, this is getting wrapped up as we speak. So this is live on air if you're watching the Derek Chauvin trial as we speak. There was a couple cops who were at the live show yesterday that I got to chat with over this, and they're already prepared in other cities, by the way. Not in Minneapolis. They were heading back to Los Angeles, and they were like, "Yeah, we're getting ready to get geared up for that." And I was like, "Really?" So the word is out. And I asked them, you know, personally, I said, as police officers, because one was black and one was Latino, I go...
Latinx, you mean?
Latinx is what I like to call it on the show. Or is it? Or is it Latinx or Latinx?
I don't know what anybody's doing in life anymore.
Nah, me neither. But I get to chat with them and I said, what do you guys think as cops is going to happen in this trial? And I said, look, man, our personal belief is they're not going to get the charge they want, and there's going to be some turmoil on the streets, and they're fully prepared for that. I would say, shit, we're probably headed towards a decision Thursday or Friday. If that's the case, I bet they bump this to Monday. There's no way.
Next week.
Yeah, there's no way they're going to let that go on a Friday and then have...
Nah, it's got to be a Monday.
Yeah, it's got to be a Monday before they let that burn down.
And they also have to not leak the results either, because that'd be a problem.
It would be a problem. I don't think they will, but we'll see. The other thing I wanted to ask you about was Maxine Waters is making a lot of headlines this morning, saying BLM should get more confrontational. How does this woman still have a job? Is what is crazy to me.
I don't know. It's funny. Breonna Taylor's mom posted on Twitter yesterday or Saturday or something that she's not received any help from BLM. Interesting, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And that woman's off buying $1 million houses and shit, whatever.
Yeah.
Who cares? People are like, oh, this is turning into a joke. No, it was always a joke.
Yeah.
All of life is a joke. Stop taking it so seriously. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's about to be pretty serious here coming up.
Yes, there are more defund politician shirts on the old merch store.
Yeah, there are. These are doing really well, actually, flying off the shelves. And so the mugs, too. The mugs are the mugs up and out today?
No, not yet. They will be soon, though.
Okay.
I'll let you know.
Okay. Yeah, man.
Yeah, Maxine Waters has got a history of this shit. She was the one that told
people to go up to people in restaurants.
Get
and
up
shit.
In people's faces and shit like that. Like, come get in my fucking face,
yeah,
Maxine, and I'll fucking knock your ass the fuck out. I don't give a shit what your job is or what your gender is. If you get in my face, you're getting the fuck out, right?
Could you imagine if you knocked out Maxine
Waters? I'll headbutt her right in the face, dude. Fuck her. What's she going to do? Bleed. She's going to lie down and bleed. That's like what she's going to do. I don't give a fuck how old she is. Fuck her, man. You don't get carte blanche to be a fucking cunt just because you're old. Right? Fuck that. I mean, you could say fucked up shit, which is hilarious.
Yeah.
There's nothing funnier than an old person who is just stop giving a shit about who they offend, and they just start talking shit.
These morning shows, man, we should do more where it's just we wake up after a fierce hangover, and you just kind of let it fly.
Yeah.
Because it's not all there today.
Well, I don't get hangovers,
it's
but...
It's not all there today.
Somebody, who is that? Sledge Tex TX said... She was talking shit about going to the White House and removing Trump from office herself, and then Nancy Pelosi's the fucking ninja or some shit. Like, come on. Yeah. Why are these octogenarian women?
Yeah.
All of a sudden they think they're fucking tough. That's the problem with modern culture. Nobody's getting smacked in the fucking face.
Well,
you know what I mean?
Maxine Waters is asking you to go smack some people in the face. You know?
I'm here, Maxine, if you want to come down here and get in my face, you fucking cunt. fuck out of here, man. What's wrong with these goddamn people?
I don't know. I don't know what's going on. It's a strange world, man. We've got a made-up coin with a dog head on it.
Let's try to get buying. Yeah, that's a good idea. Let's
how is you. How is Dogecoin doing today? Is that
everything is down except Dogecoin?
What is it, Doge or Dodge? Doge.
Who cares what it is?
Yeah. My God, man. And that's just a made up. I read an interview with the two guys that created that, and they were like, it was just purely a joke, man. Like that's all we did. Now This is a currency that people are getting rich off of. They did a story yesterday about this kid who dumped his entire life savings at 28 years old into Dogecoin or Dogecoin, the dog head coin, and is now a multimillionaire, and he's doing nothing off of a fake dog coin.
Yeah. I don't know. The dog part you just made up. That's not a thing.
Yeah, they've got a dog head on the coin.
No, I know that, but it's not a dog coin.
No.
It's Doge.
It's Doge, but they put a dog head on this coin. And
oh, it's dog e-coin, probably.
Maybe.
Doge is just like a dumb internet meme to like call a dog. Like, oh, look at the Doge. Look at the pupper. Yeah. Look at the fur baby. Doge is just like a dumb Reddit.
Well, that's dumb.
Yeah.
That's real dumb. So I like this idea of me fighting Maxine Waters for charity. If she wins, BLM can have the money.
You can open up for the next Jake Paul fight.
Yeah, if she wins, BLM can have the money. If I win, she has to retire. That's my charity. Fuck out of here, piece of shit. What a piece of fucking shit.
Yeah, number 12 of trending in America, Bob, is Doge Day. This is Doge Day, dude. Get on it. Get on it. What's it at? What are the numbers at for Doge? Is that started off as a penny thing, right? It was just one penny.
No, it was like 0.08 cents or some shit like that, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it was like some Office Space shit. You know, where it's like, oh, we're just taking a fraction of a cent.
Yeah.
It's at 39 cents.
Shit.
So if you got in at 1 cent, what, you've basically 40x'd your investment?
Yeah. Yeah. That's crazy, man.
Fucking.
What a world we live in, huh?
Everything else is down.
I'll only kick.
Yeah.
No punching. I'll just kick.
With Maxine Waters?
Yeah.
Imagine what a leg kick would do to Maxine Waters.
Oh, yeah. It would shatter her fucking whole life.
Oh, yeah. It would probably end it. She might have a heart attack.
I only kick with my left leg, my non-dominant leg.
How old is Maxine Waters, Bob? look her age up and her stats. Let's get height and weight. Let's get a full ring card here on Maxine Waters.
Okay. She is 82.
Great.
Oh, yeah. Man, I was in the 82nd Airborne. It works out perfectly. Let's do this.
Yeah. The battle for 82.
I'm not getting a height and weight situation here.
look harder.
I probably got a bit of a reach on her.
I will say this, though. St. Louis girl, born in the city. Better watch out. She's going to fight dirty.
Okay.
She's going
to. Okay.
All right, let's go. Maxine Waters, height.
Not
here.
At all worried about that.
Yeah, no height listed. No height listed. Hang on.
I got something.
There you go.
I mean, God knows how accurate it is, but it's loading right now.
Sure.
It's on some shitty website.
Height is 1.69 meters. What is that converted over into real person's feet?
It's about 5 feet.
That can't be right.
It can't be right. Weight, they've got it at 65 kilograms.
2.2 times 2.2.
Times 2.2, so she clocks in around 130.
5.5 feet.
So she's 5'5", clocks in around 130, and is 82 years old.
But she's 82, so her height is probably more like 5'3 right now. She shrank all the time.
Yeah. Now that she's in an advanced age, you do shrink. You lose a couple inches. So she's probably 5'1". We'll try to set that up, because Jake Paul will probably be fighting Manny Pacquiao or Oscar De La Hoya next.
Ivan Weir did with the same joke from the other day. Maxine versus Dan to the death, and then Dan wins and kills himself after.
On live TV. Yeah. That'd be great. Join us this afternoon on Drinker Bros Sports. That is our new podcast feed for that. And we'll be doing a recap show for the weekend. And I think that's going to become a Monday thing for us on the sports feed. We recap all the events sporting wise from the weekend. And then tonight on this very channel, Icebreakers. With Chuck Liddell and Adam Ray, their special guest is Dana White. Dana White is in the house. My only thing, and I want to give you a warning on this. The only thing that I'm angry about is that this was recorded on Thursday, so we didn't know about the Jake Paul verdict and all that other stuff. But I was unaware of the bet they made. I found that out today. I went through his Instagram. Dana White allegedly bets $1 million to Jake Paul that Ben Askren was going to beat him. And so Jake is trolling Dana, saying all the things he's going to do with that $1 million, which is really, really funny. But yeah. I did not know they made that bet. So unfortunately, you will not get that answer tonight. But God damn it, man. I wish we did.
What does Jake Paul weigh?
He looks about 200. Yeah, 205, somewhere in there.
Okay, let's get him against a light heavy guy.
Yeah, like I said, you know what's weird, and we'll talk about this on the sports recap show today, was ESPN did an article this morning on it of where do you go from here. They literally had the same exact notes and things that you and I were chatting about yesterday, and we'll chat about it this afternoon. I know the director of that event, so I'm going to reach out to him and see if I can get him on air, because I'm sure they'll bring him back to do that again.
Yeah, why not? Well, I don't know. I mean, the
production. He's a great guy. I did a movie for him, 10 years ago.
That production was terrible. Well, it looked like it was run by children. It looked like a fucking the high school news show.
Yeah, and that's what the ESPN article was saying is, look, if they can dial this in somehow, this might be how to bring people back to, you know, Gen Zers back to boxing again. But we'll see. I have my own thoughts on that, and you can check back in to Drinking Bros Sports this afternoon when we go live and do that show. In the meantime, go to iTunes, rate the show a 5-star, and leave a review. That is what helps keep us at the top of the charts on iTunes and all that other stuff. So please go out and do that. We greatly appreciate it. D'Anthony, it was a fun show.
Yeah.
It was a fun show. She was a great lady.
Yeah, she was. She put up with a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, she did. And Maxine, if you're out there, Dan Holloway is ready, willing, and able to have a shot at the title.
I didn't personally attack Dana the same way I did, what's his nuts?
Spicer?
Spice Dog, yeah.
Hashtag Spice Dog.
Yeah, because the first thing I said to Spicer was, oh, you're in the Navy. That's kind of like the military.
Yeah.
And he was like, yep.
Yep. He did, to his credit, he was a good dude.
He
actually hit us up and was like, dude, I'll love to come back on Drinking
Bros. Yeah, he's a funny guy.
Yeah, we enjoyed that show. Oh, that's right. Snoop bet $2 million, too.
Yeah.
And he had Jake Paul. Giorgio is nowhere to be found today because he's trying to find that $1,000 that he lost to Xander.
He's probably hanging in the back.
Yeah.
One of the beams back there.
Yeah. It'll be a nice nice little Bourdain moment when we find him, you know? Join us this afternoon. We'll see you soon, kids. And then tonight, again, Dana White is on this network with Chuck Liddell and Adam Ray for Icebreakers tonight. For D'Anthony and Anthony Holloway, I'm Ross Patterson. This is the Drinking Bros. Good morning.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.